Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County and the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our honored guest this week is Daryl White Wolf. Daryl's up Cherokee, and he's of the age to be an elder, and we're talking to him in Adelaide, Australia. He's been down under for about 4 or 5 years. And hello, Daryl. Welcome to the show.
Oh, CO Blue Otter.
Oh, CO. Well, we...
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. I first heard of you last, I guess it was last May, you issued a challenge to... Native elders worldwide, and it was picked up and reposted everywhere. That was just
yes, it was
amazing, and a lot's happened since. There was a lot going on at that time, and that was back during the Aussie bloke scare, and which I don't think that whole thing is over with. There's too many strange things going on down under, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you. So tell the folks a little bit about yourself and just kind of meander around and let them know what you're thinking about the way things are going in the world.
Okay, well, I'm just me. I'm not really no different than anybody else. I've always known I was Cherokee through my family, my grandfather. Way back when I was 6 years old, a lot of things started happening with me back then. I can remember most of it like it happened yesterday. grandfather set me down, my grandfather Thomas, set me down. We was out in Fort Worth, Texas at the time, and I was sitting on a swing set. We were listening to wolves howling in the distance. And you know, back then, there were wolves out there, and not much civilization, if I remember right. He told me something always stuck with me. A few things, actually. He said, number one, he says, "You are Cherokee," he says, "and you're from the clan of the wolf." And he says, "And there's something else I want you to remember as you go through life," and this has always stuck with me. He says, "Remember that you don't own anything, not even the shirt on your back." And I tell people that today, you know, because there's a lot of truth in that. We don't own anything. If we put everything that we think we own on the ground, it's going to go back to the earth where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
But, most of my family, and it was a big family, cousins, I've got cousins all over the United States, but most of them come from around Cooper County, Kentucky, along the Owensboro and the Ohio River there. And we used to go down there and hunt fish and trap back when I was a kid. And I remember some of these old shacks we used to go to, and there were fish. There weren't clothes hanging on the line. There were fish hanging on the line. animal skins, you know, raccoons and possums and things like that stretched out on these little ironing board looking things. And it was a different way of life down there. People ate really good. I mean, when we had people over for dinner, there was just tons and tons of food. But, you know, they didn't wear, you know, feathers and leather and fur and things like that. Everybody wore rags pretty much. And, growing up, it wasn't really a good thing to be Indian or part Indian or anything to do with Indians where I grew up at. So we were shunned and told to keep it quiet. And I got beat up a few times just for having high cheekbones. But I learned to stand up for myself. And I went through life with most kids and young adults, and I went into the military after high school. Oh, I went to high school, the same high school with David Letterman.
Hmm.
I think he was 4 years ahead of me, but we both went to Broad Ripple High School on the north side of Indianapolis. And after I got out of high school, I think I finished my last year in Galena Park, Houston, Texas. And then I went in the military, and I joined the Marines, and went through boot camp and basic training, and we were actually the first, in boot camp, we had the first full honor series battalion in the history of the Marine Corps. I mean, we went through some rigorous training, you know, back in, those were the old Corps days, when they could do just about anything they wanted to you. Nowadays, they have to be a little more careful, but, and then we went through infantry battalion training.
That's back when Lee Ermey was a DI, huh?
that was back not long after Smedley Butler come through to inspect the base there in North Carolina, and he says, "I've seen all this." He says, "I want to see the real Marines take me to the brig." But yeah, it was the old Corps. I bet people could tell some stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I went into communications. That was my MOS, communications 2511. Field wireman. So I was a pole climber. They taught us how to climb a telephone pole and rescue a cat off the top of it. Now that's a trick. That is a trick if you don't know what you're doing.
Mm.
Then we had to do combat jumps off the poles and stuff like that. And I got into radio, 2533, I believe it was, the MOS. Radio communications, field communications. And, of course, the first thing after infantry training that they did was they divided us up into two groups, and one group went to Anchorage, Alaska. My group went to Da Nang.
Mm.
And the plane that went to Anchorage, Alaska crashed and killed everybody on board.
Oh my!
So I was quite blessed with going to Vietnam. Actually, I consider it a blessing that I didn't get on that plane. But you know, I lost a lot of friends in that, and I lost a lot of friends in Vietnam too, as a lot of guys did. but I didn't see a whole lot of action. I was most of the time in the rear with the gear, and but there were some times when they sent us out on what they call LRP patrols or long range reconnaissance, ambush patrols and things like that. We'd spend about 6 days out in the jungle. But anyway, I don't want to get into all that stuff, but you know, after that, I got out of the service, and I went up to Canada, and I started working with horses up there because I've always had an affection for horses, and worked with hunters and jumpers up there, but they were not your ordinary hunters and jumpers. These were Clydesdales and thoroughbred crossbreed, huge horse. We're talking 18, 20-hand tall. Did that for a few months up there for some people, and that was in London, Ontario. Went down to Florida and worked with the Florida horse down there, hunters and jumpers, and also thoroughbreds. And I raised horses from the foaling stall to the starting gate. And then after that, I moved out to Arizona because that's where my uncle and my aunt lived. They lived out in Groom Creek Pines up in Prescott. And I spent 12 years living on Apache land out there, down in a little town called Elfrida. I started the first ambulance service in Elfrida. Went back to college, went back to school, went to Cochise College, and took emergency medical training to become an EMT. I was already a volunteer firefighter, but I went on and took more classes than that, became a firefighter one, rescue. I was well-versed in bulk flammable liquids and explosive vapors, bush fires, wildland fires, structural fires, and high extrication. So I got a lot of training, and then I even went on to become an advanced EMT, which was advanced life support, intubation, defibrillation, IVs, and things like that. And then I could tell you, you know, so many stories about Arizona.
All bad.
Some of them are pretty strange, but yeah. So I've been around. You know, I spent some time in Japan and Okinawa, and I'm finally here in Australia. I like it here.
What sent you down that way?
What brought me down here? Well, my wife dragged me down here by the hair of the head. No, I met her at a powwow. I met her at a powwow in Michigan, up in Grand Rapids. I was dancing up there, and I run into her, and things just kind of click, you know how they do. And it went from there, and I've always wanted to come to Australia. I had a chance when I was in Vietnam to come here for R&R, but it never panned out. It was either Australia or Taipei, and I wanted to come to Australia. I've always wanted to see this country, and, well, here I am. And I'm a permanent resident here now, so I can actually go back and forth anytime I want.
Well, that's really cool.
You can talk. I don't have to take up the whole conversation here.
Yeah, well, we're done with that part, you know. But I guess last May there was quite a bit of excitement, a lot of strange reports about things happening at the South Pole, reports coming out of South Australia about a military base that I guess it had been closed, but it had been reopened, and that the locals said that there was something called Project Wormwood going on down there. Just a lot of high strangeness, a lot of really strange news coming out of it.
Yeah.
About that time, that's when you issued your challenge. And so I want you to tell, you know, the folks a little bit about, you know, what that was all about, and this is last May, you know, April, May.
Yeah, that was May. It was right out. It was 4 days after the white buffalo calf was born up in Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea at the time that it happened, and somebody wrote me a letter saying, "Did you know that there was a white buffalo calf that was just born up there?" And I had no idea that happened, but I knew that things were getting strange. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on here, and we had a really active year of UFO sightings down here at the time.
Did you have a lot of meteors also?
Yeah, there was a lot of meteors, and some of them, well, I was sitting here one night, and there was a loud bang. I mean, in the the dogs in the neighborhood went off, and there was a big flash. Turned out, you know, it was a meteor, a rather large one, that came into the atmosphere and blew up, as they do.
That was...
I never really worried about anything big, you know, coming in and hitting us. I didn't quite think that was going to happen.
Well, that was the rumor that you know, something was going to blindside us coming from the south of the planet, and that there were a lot of the rumor that was circulating was that just about every astronomer in the world had rotated down there, you know, in the first 6 months of last year. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of really strange goings-on, a prediction of a possible asteroid strike or a close flyby. And oddly enough, there were some huge, I guess over around Indonesia, there was a couple of really large meteors that literally turned the night sky to almost daylight or something like that. There was some big stuff coming in. So really, it really made people wonder. And then the whole situation with Aussie bloke, you know, who it turned out to be. Well, I guess the jury's still out on exactly what that was all about. But the person, apparently a person who was impersonating a former physicist down there, a physicist who had years before done some research on possible near-Earth objects or possible asteroid strike. And this Dr. Grant Gertrell was on vacation, and during the first couple of weeks of May, someone got on the internet and started posting, and I guess on May 15th they said, well, my name is Dr. you know, Gertrell, and so I picked up that bit of information and started looking around, and then I discovered there was a Dr. Grant Gertrell who had testified in front of the parliament of his province there in Australia on the subject of caving. And that really got me interested. And then I further searched, you know, I found out that he had retired and bought a blueberry farm. And so I guess, you know, I contacted you. We actually got the guy's phone number, and I guess you found somebody that went to try to find where he was, and nobody was around and hadn't been around for a couple of weeks, which further, I guess, kind of fueled the...
Makes you wonder.
Oh, yeah. All of it just added up to, hey, what in the world is going on? And the fact that he might be in a cave somewhere, you know. Apparently he had found some prehistoric dinosaur bones or something, but it was all really highly strange. And I guess the whole scare had gotten started a year ago, January, with something called the Snowball Intercept, which was a ham radio operator had intercepted a countdown, a reference to, you know, T-minus 100 and some odd days and counting until impact. So, you know, there's a lot of people that were really concerned last year. A lot of people that still are, but just because the asteroid thing didn't happen, there were a lot of large things that did enter the atmosphere down there, and a lot of strange things that went on. And you and I had some interesting conversations, and I guess the whole thing ended up with Dr. Gertrell was really nonplussed. I think there's a copy I've still got the copy of the newspaper article that was written about the whole incident. But anyway,
front page here.
Yeah, it was a really interesting period of time. I don't scare real easy, but I was pretty concerned. I was concerned enough at that point in time to call a couple people that I knew 25 and 30 years ago that I hadn't spoken to give them a heads up. And I just told them, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. There's just a lot of strange things going on. And, we were friends. Yeah, we haven't talked in 25 or 30 years. I said, but, you know, hey, it might be worth putting in a little bit extra food and water and...
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man's. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities, and there's so much professionalism. You know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch, and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
And, of course, it's always prudent. But so in that 11 or 12 months since then, what observations do you have about other things that have gone on?
Well, we're not out of the woods yet, I can tell you that.
Uh-huh.
There were a lot of strange things going on, and even before Gartrell's letter came out, there were meteor impacts happening all over the world. In India, there was a village that got hit, several houses burnt down. There was one in went through a roof in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember some mm-hmm. of those, but those reports were finally starting to come out, and I don't know. You know, since we've had this modern technology and the wonder of the Internet and everything, and you kind of have to sift through the piles that, in the Internet to get the truths because there's so much garbage mixed in there with it. You just have to use your own discernment. But, yes, things were really heating up around here at that time. There was 1,000 astronomers showing up down on the Antarctic region down there. You just don't go there with 1,000 astronomers to look at stars. There must be a reason. All the battleships in the world seem to be going out into the oceans.
Yeah.
I would say, well, they're not safe in the ports. And, a person couldn't help but wonder what was going on.
Well, you know, the other thing I found out after that, I spoke with the fellow that has the commercial at largest supply of potassium iodide in the United States, and he supplies... most of what FEMA has. And he said the previous December that FEMA came to him and wanted everything he had, and which is, 60,000 doses. And potassium iodide is what you take in case there's a nuclear attack. And
I've got mine right here.
Mm-hmm, so that, it blocks your thyroid. It puts enough iodide in your thyroid so it doesn't become poisoned from... radioactive iodine isotopes, and so there was a lot of scary stuff going on back then. The other strange thing was that was reported in the Russian papers and other places was that there was some kind of a whirlwind or vortex or something that they sent weather balloons up into, and when they would send, the chronometers would come back with some kind of missing time. And it was just, you really don't know what, you can observe who's coming and going and nobody's talking, and everybody kind of looks scared, and.
Yeah.
But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead with what you were saying.
Okay. Well, when this letter came about, I really don't know what happened. I talked to Spirit. Spirit talks to me, and I normally just am a forward observer. I stay out of things for the most part. I've seen a lot in my life, and I just. Something seemed to prop me up here and say, do this. You got to do this. And that it was time to light a fire under people, if you will. And I used the word challenge, and not out of disrespect, but I knew that it would draw a response. And it did. It did. I thought, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get my head chopped off. I'm really out on a limb here, but this is what I'm told to do, and I have to do it. But I started receiving emails and letters left and right. In 3 weeks' time, I received over 300 emails alone.
I was surprised. I figured you were going to get laughed at, but the vast majority of what you got was very positive and very supportive.
Absolutely. I think there was only three letters out of 350 that were negative responses, and one of them was from a witch, actually. And it was a threat from a witch that she threatened to call up the Thunder Beings and the Jaguars. And I wrote back and sent her blessings, and I said, well, bring him on, because when the Jaguar comes to look into my heart and through my eyes, he's going to see my intentions. It had a lot to do as well with teaching non-Native people about Native ways and things like that. And but I think there was one person that wrote back and said something about me just wanting information on ceremonies. Well, there was nothing in the letter about me wanting information on ceremonies. I have my own ceremonies. Everybody's got their own. I really don't. It's not an issue. It's not an issue. And I understand that a lot of ceremonies have to be protected, because I know firsthand that if they get in the wrong hand, people use them the wrong way, that it can be devastating. And it'll go out like a ripple in a pond. So no, I don't. I never was interested in any ceremonies. What I was interested in was getting people come forward with the information that they had that would help people to prepare in the event that there was a big event coming our way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt that this was a precursor to, and like I said, we're not out of the woods yet. I wouldn't go back to sleep just yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was a precursor. So everybody knows that the Native people of the world, not just the American Indians, but the Native people of the world, the Aboriginals, the Tibetans, the Kahunas, all of them, they have the knowledge. They know what's going on. They've been in contact with the star beings. They've seen the future. They know the pathways. And my message was to get the elders to get together, to get their heads together, put all their differences aside, and make a decision on whether or not to put this information out to the public. And I still feel that this is necessary, because what I see going on here is a lot of little circles around the world, and these little circles are like drumming circles and healing circles and prayer circles, and these are all wonderful things. But I don't see them connected with the big circle. And I feel that Spirit is trying to tell me this message, which is gather your circles. Those three words, gather your circle. That really, and I say, why me? What are you telling me this poor? But then I realize that I'm not the only one that's hearing this message. So it doesn't mean getting all of the elders and chiefs and everybody to gather in one place. It means they can stay where they're at in the country they're at, but every nation of every continent in the world, the old wise ones, the Tibetans, ever since I was a kid, and reading the Bible and everything and hearing the Bible stories, one of the most fascinating stories to me was how Joshua took down the walls of Jericho. He did it with trumpets, vibration. And I, in fact, I named my son Joshua. It's for that simple reason. But and another thing that I learned was that the Tibetans could levitate stones, large stones that were about 3 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot square. They could levitate these stones actually in the air by using vibration from trumpets and drums chanting. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Jesus walked on water. Maybe he didn't walk on water, but he vibrated high enough that he could levitate and float over the top of water. And in India, there's stories of some of the old wise India, brown Indian men that could sit on the floor and actually raise their bodies off the floor.
Oh, what?
Pardon me?
Jesus said, you know, these things you see me do and even greater you'll do, and a few people are doing them.
Yeah, we can do that too, if we can remember how. So, can you imagine the power of all of the elders, all of the chiefs, all of the medicine men and women, and the dancers? I mean, I've gone to a powwow and spent 3 days at a powwow, and after everything's all packed up and left, I've gone back there two or three days later, and I can still feel it and hear it just like it's still there. So all this energy together, in a good way, in a positive way, can turn all this fear that people have been conditioned with right back to where it came from. And I feel deep inside of me that we can, you know, we've got two pathways here. We come to about one step from the fork in the road now, and we can see down both pathways. And one of them I feel like I'm in a group of lemmings, and I'm one of the lemmings, and I'm being pushed toward this cliff, and I can see the cliff ahead. On the other path, I see a path of peace and reconstruction and changing of our ways and taking back the earth and actually setting her free again. You know, these are the two choices that we have, and I feel that if we don't come together as one, in one big circle, then we fail, and if we fail, we fall off that cliff. So basically, that's my message, and you know, some people disagree and some people agree, but sooner or later we're gonna see the end result.
How are Native people viewed? Are things improving? You know, down in Australia for the Aboriginal people. I know there was a lot of activity with the tent embassy last year, and what's been going on in the last year? What have you heard?
There's been no improvements down here, none whatsoever, and I'm sorry to say that because I was really disappointed the other day when I saw some of the elders come on television, and they actually, I couldn't believe they said this, they want to arrest the Queen. They want to arrest the Queen for genocide. They want to boycott the Commonwealth Games, or what they call the Stolen Wealth Games. And, you know, the thing of it is this has never worked before. Protesting in the streets, carrying signs, being angry at the government and everything, that has never worked before. Never, ever, has it ever made a difference. And, you know, this thing, love is a good thing, and love is a very powerful energy. But you know, the hippies tried that back in the 60s and the 70s, and that didn't work either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to bubble over with love, it to me is a little bit unrealistic. It's good to love people, and you can, I don't really think it's possible to love everybody all the time. You need to respect your neighbor, but it's been pretty much proven you can't really love your neighbor all the time. But you can respect them. You respect their ways of being things.
Well, the way laws are set up, you know, basically the whole Western world, including Australia, is set up on old Roman law, and it's up to you to prove what your rights are. And I mean, there's activism, and then there's you can cross that line into violence and get a struggle mentality. But yeah, you got to get out, and you have to get out into public and let people know where things went wrong and sway public opinion and educate public and what you got to do.
Yeah, you do have to get out there, but you got to be careful of your choice of word, because everything has dual meaning. So. And even here in Australia, you have to be very careful what you say, because people can take it one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
If I say dark brothers here, when I'm speaking of dark brothers doing their dirty deeds, I'm speaking of the ones that are hurting us, taking our rights away, taking our freedoms away, and things. And they may think I'm talking about dark brothers, meaning Aboriginal brothers.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful. You got to be careful. But I've spoken with some of the elders down here, Uncle Thomas, down here in down here along the Coorong. Been out there on Aboriginal land, and these are wonderful people, and they all have the same views on the Earth Mother that we do. There's so much of a connection here that it's unbelievable.
Well, I guess there was some information that came out of South America last year that that scientists are really starting to wonder if there weren't migrations from Australia into South America. I can't remember how they came to that conclusion, but there's a lot of old things that were assumed. There's a lot of bubbles that are being burst and preconceived notions that are being disabused, and a lot of interesting things going on. A lot of
being changed all the time.
Yeah, things are being changed, and but politically, down there, folks are. Things are not getting better, and so Aboriginal people are starting to get angry, huh?
Well, they've just been taken off the flora and fauna list. Wouldn't you be angry? I mean, they were considered animals here.
Yeah.
So, and they were on the list of flora and fauna. That's not good. That's not a good thing. They're human beings just like we are, and I see no difference other than they're a little bit darker skinned than most of us. They have different ways than most of us. And in a lot of ways, they're so connected with the Native American ways, it's unbelievable. They call Father Sky, and Mother Earth, Mother Earth. They honor the directions and all that. They have their sacred fires, and there's a story the scientists came up with that said that the Aboriginals and the American Indians actually lived on the same continent at one time before the great cataclysms.
Gondwana land, uh-huh.
Yeah, which would explain probably why they still find arrowheads and spearheads here on occasion, Flint Rock. I don't know. But and then there's also a theory that the original Aboriginals came from Southeast Asia over another type of land bridge here.
Well, I think the Bible indicates that originally all the land masses were one, and then it was broken up. And of course, the continental drift theory would support that. And so, why should we be surprised? But I just get the feeling that the Aboriginal people in Australia somehow are really elder, if you know what I mean. Elder.
Oh, yes. I'll tell you what, you talk about powerful elders here. These elders, some of these elders and medicine men here have crystals implanted or embedded in their chest.
Hmm.
And if they point the bone at you, it don't matter what end of the world you're on. If they point the bone at you and want to curse you, you better look out. No place to hide. And they have already pointed the bone at John Howard, who's the Prime Minister here, because he refuses to recognize him and acknowledge acknowledge them and apologize. You know, apology here is a big thing. That's all it takes, really, to get the ball rolling. It's to say, hey, you know, we're sorry. We were stupid. We need to change our ways of thinking.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought that whole process was underway. And what, they get a new administration in the government in down there? Or,
the administration that's in here now, I don't know if I should talk about it, but it's not good. It's following all of the political maneuvers behind closed doors that's going on in America. If America sneezes, Australia catches cold.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osman back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated, and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now.
Put it
Osman.
Under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osman, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. That's a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Yeah, well, you know, things went ebb and tide here, you know, when different administrations are in, you know, they kind of felt like, you know, George Bush, you know, Indians here in the United States really kind of have the opinion that the Democrats help them more. I don't know if they do or not. I think it really just depends on. I mean, look at what Kennedy did, you know, with the flooding of the Allegheny River, the dam project, and all those things. It's really kind of a mixed bag. Nixon did some really good things, I understand, but I think, you know, most American Indians really line up with the liberal and the Democrat, and as do blacks, but blacks, for some reason, have been conditioned to go Democrat, but they forget it was the party of Lincoln that freed them, and that was a Republican. So, yeah, it's all kind of a mixed bag. And of course, when governments change and you know, different policies go into effect, and so I guess things are just kind of stalled down there in Australia. Then, and so the Prime Minister down there has got his back up, and maybe it's an economic thing. Maybe they're scared that they're going to have to give some things back, or Is it a rights issue, or what is it that the Aboriginals are asking for? They want some land back, or what is it that they've been asking for? Just an apology.
Well, they want an apology. They want entitlement to their lands, their sacred lands, especially the sacred site. When you go build it on sacred sites, and you know we know this as well. When you go building on sacred sites, you're building on Mother's beauty lines. You know, she can't breathe. So this is being brought to the front. There's also issues of human rights, health care. You know, they got problems like we do, internal struggles, and there's drugs and alcohol. And big thing down here with a lot of the younger generation in the Aboriginal community is sniffing gasoline, puffing.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, that's a big problem here. Suicide, getting beat up by the cops. There's been riots here lately, a couple different places. Oh, you know, they say that the police were chasing a kid, and he fell onto a fence and impaled himself on a fence. And, of course, everybody in the town come unglued, and there were bottle rockets and fire bombs and things thrown at the police. Yeah, it was a big, you know, big blow-up over that.
Sounds like the same kind of stuff that was going on up here in the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah.
I guess they're about 30 years behind the aim then.
Yeah, they are, actually. Yeah. Everything's behind here. You know, when you guys get the new movies over here, we don't get them until about 6 months later. So. And that's the way with everything.
Well, maybe we need some more Crocodile Dundee to put Aboriginal people in a better light. I know.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that because it is strange. Most of the Americans, if they haven't been to Australia, that's all they know about Australia is Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
And the Australians here know absolutely nothing about the Native Americans other than what they see on television. And, you know, they still show the old Ricardo Montalban Indian movies here.
Oh, you're kidding.
The John Wayne Indian movies. All the old ones that portray the Indians as savages, you know. And you'll see every once in a while, you'll see a stupid commercial that... is about one of their gambling casinos here, and it'll show an Indian putting his head on the railroad tracks listening for something to come. You know, just stupid commercials that depict the Native American Indian as in the old ways, the old TV Hollywood ways, the savage. Huh. So they really know nothing about us here. And when I first came here, boy, I'll tell you, they rolled out the red carpet for me. And I was really surprised. And people want to know. They do want to know. And I said this to somebody yesterday, you know, religion is, if you look at it as a whole, it is all the same. We all worship, or, you know, we all pray to the same God, or the Great Spirit. Whether they know it or not, it's all the same one. And the only reason, the only thing that's wrong with it is they put fences up in between all of them and divide it. And that's what the New World Order is all about anyway, is divide and conquer. I forgot where I was going with this, but...
Well, I know, you know, we've interviewed Yellow Horse Man. He was down there with Maki Ruka, I guess, back in the probably 70s and 80s. And Maki, I guess, was a Maori elder, but they traveled worldwide. And Chokosh Aoho'o, she's a Chumash elder, and she's been down there. And Earth Thunder... another elder that we've done that's been down there, and they've there's people down there that want to know. There's been a lot of conferences and workshops, and you know, a lot of people wanting to know. And I think it's great, you know, for Aboriginal people. Anything we can learn from them, that's wonderful, because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot of ways, American Native people are forgetting a lot about their culture. I know basically the Cherokee culture was over with by 1880, and we're really trying to, there's bits and pieces. It was like a shotgun, you know, bird shot going off, one shot aimed straight toward the zenith, and everything just landed scattered, and... after 100 years, so they try to reconstitute everything, and then by this time, everybody that's got a little bit here and a little bit there, they figure that they've got it all, and so we got fighting going on all over the place among Cherokees, which is nothing new. But you know, putting the whole, the Ketua prophecy, you know, said that at this time there'd be. Our blood would be diluted, and we'd be, you know, fighting between families, and it really is unfortunate, you know, especially with
the ones that are federally recognized, putting the ones that aren't down. When the surprising thing is the ones that aren't federally recognized were the ones that were the most traditional people. And, So, you know, it's all, of course, the ones that are federally recognized are the ones that get the press, and so it's a real mess. And then you got, oh, the ceremony police. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of that going on here, too. You know, people making noises that, I don't want to cross that line over.
Some of the blue otter is quite understandable because I have seen some not Indian people out there that are what, you know, I hate that word wannabe, but doggone it, that's what they're trying to do. And
yeah.
They're making Indian crafts and selling them as genuine stuff, and that is cultural theft in my book.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of really true-hearted, as opposed to two-hearted people out there that are genuinely interested in the culture. They want to connect with that spirit, and they have every right to, because we all belong in the same circle. I mean, if we're going to say, we're all one, then we better walk the walk as well as talk the talk.
Yeah, well, you can't. I mean, the people, I know what you mean about the wannabe thing, because I used to, I used to resent people that call other people wannabes, but after you, I mean, not everybody knows as much about our culture as you and I do, and after a while you run into people, you know, it's kind of a, well, you know, they say ignorance is you don't know and you don't want to know, and you get a people that discover their Cherokee or whatever, and they'll read a little bit about it, and then all of a sudden they'll put a bone necklace on and grow their hair a little bit long or take a Cherokee name and mispronounce it,
give themselves a name.
Yeah, these people are good-hearted. They just, it's tough to walk up to them, though, and say, hey, you've got a little bit of a clue, but you don't have a clue, you know, and then the big fight comes over, well, who's going to teach them? And then the competition, the jockeying with to capture their minds, and we have so much of that going on here, especially in this state, because there are so many Cherokees here there was a 1817 reservation just south of here across the Arkansas state line, and after the Trail of Tears, you know, and they had begun relocating. Missouri and Arkansas, you know, at the end of the 1700s, and so when the bunch walked the Trail of Tears, and they just took over, and they said, well, if you don't send your chief in to a certain place at a certain time, you're outlaws, and a lot of them just thumbed their nose at them and said, well, hey, you know, we're staying where we're at, and you can do whatever you want to, and but people are beginning to wake up to being Cherokee and a lot of other different tribes, but there's just so there's not a lot of information around, and be real frank with you, we've got a lot of personality cults going on here.
Yeah.
People claiming to be chiefs and, misrepresenting the culture, and you put that together with a populace that isn't really well-read, and they're already predisposed to kind of be ignorant because they haven't had a lot of schooling, and they don't maybe not read well, and they might have learning disabilities. And I'll tell you, it gets to be a real mess. It gets to be a real mess.
Absolutely.
We've got a lot of we've got a long road ahead of us, and we're just now going around the corner here, and I think. We're not alone. As Cherokees, we're not alone. I think we've got a lot to learn from our brothers down in Mexico and Central America. Mm-hmm. I call those the real Indians, you know. But, you know, a lot of arrogant American Indians would look at them and say, well, they're not Indians, they're Mexicans. Well, you know, for heaven's sake. You know, those are the people that are down there still living tribal ways. And so anyway, everybody's... being
rich. What I'm struggling with more than anything is trying to find out what my other blood is. Because I'm not. It's a toss-up between German and Irish, but I'm leaning more toward Irish because of grandfather. My grandfather was personal friends with Pat O'Brien, the actor, years ago. And you know, there was a lot of talk of Irish being in the woodpile back then.
What was the surname?
So, pardon me.
You're a Smith, though, right?
Yeah, I'm a Smith. On my stepfather's, I was adopted out at 3 months. Old by my stepfather and stepmother, or my mother's sister. My grandfather was full blood Cherokee. My mother, I think she was Cherokee and Irish. And my biological father, who I only met like once or twice, his last name was actually Newman, which I think is German, and that's what is so confusing about it, you know. So you know, I'm having more of a struggle finding out what the other part of my body is.
Newman,
I already know the German part.
From Neumann. That's pretty German.
German, N-E-U-M-A-N. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that sounds German, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard, especially with adoptions. And your ancestor that was full-blood Cherokee, was he assigned a last name, or he just come through Virginia and... You know, with some of the early English that married in, because there's a lot of Smiths that come down from the marriage between Powhatan and Pocahontas' mother.
Yeah, well, grandfather was his last name was Thomas.
Okay. Yeah, there was Thomas old settlers that went into Oklahoma.
Yeah,
it's a pretty common Cherokee name. I interviewed Paul Thomas was the chief of the Cherokee Elders Society, and so that's not an uncommon, name among
Cherokees. No, and I found documents in my lineage going back to the 1800s, and a lot of the last names had "eni" in them, Walini. Alini, things like that, you know, which are common Cherokee, old Cherokee names.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back when, you know, a lot of them were born and died on the same day or died 3 months later, you know, back when the smallpox and all that stuff was going around. There was a lot of short lifespans back then. And then...
So your family made it to Oklahoma?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. In North Carolina as well, you know, they spread out all over the place.
Because I was thinking here in Texas, a lot of the Cherokees that allied with the Confederacy ended up staying in Texas.
Yeah,
a lot left the country, went to South America.
Yeah.
But
there's also. Big misconception, and it's a myth about, you know, what an Indian looks like. And you know, I think we talked about this before years ago when the first settlers came in. They found blonde-haired, blue-eyed children running around through the camps.
Well, that was
white skin.
That was De Soto, Hernan De Soto, in the expedition of 1540. He, you know, they're the way. Chief Rogers, the chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, he said that the Cherokees have always been like a multicolored rope. We've always had four different colors running through us and always will. And, you know, the ones that got caught up in the Trail of Tears, you know, were the dark ones, because you can look at the pictures of the ones that, and of course, you know, when we came up from Mexico, I think we look different than we are now. And if you go to CherokeeNationMexico.com, you can see, you know, some of the characteristics that the Cherokee people used to have, like the kind of the ski jump nose, and you know, they still wore turban like or stocking hats back in those days, and these were lighter skinned people that lived right next to the Mayans. And our civilization apparently we moved up here about 1,500 years ago, which coincides with the drought in Yucatan. Our wampum belts are type of Mexican seaweed. So, yeah, we've migrated around, and I think the people that could pass for white did, and because the pressure was so great. But, I mean, the stories of so-called white Indians are just, there's just so many of them. But the whole idea of
Aboriginals here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the whole idea of being, you know, what a full blood is has nothing to do with, you know, what your skin color is. It's always been a matter of attitude. And,
yeah. Well, there's a Hollywood Indian, what I call the Hollywood Indian image. A lot of people don't know. You know, all they see is what they see in the TV and the movies.
Yeah. Well, then Cherokees look different from all other Indians anyway. We're taller. We don't have the moon-shaped faces. We look different. So we get razzed a lot.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Anciently, you know, if a Cherokee or a Hopi spoke up, everybody shut up and listened because we were known as the Twin Fires.
Yeah.
And but nowadays, you know, I guess we're all like Rodney Dangerfield. We get no respect. You know?
We get no respect.
We get no respect. That's okay.
That's all right.
That's all right.
We're not. Yeah.
But well, this is great. I'm glad I had a chance to talk with you. Got some other friends down there in Australia that met through Red Elk, and I know they're going to be tickled to see you being interviewed. You might what's the name of that board that you post to pretty often? I can't remember.
I used to post on Surfing the Apocalypse.
Yeah, for Surfing the Apocalypse. Yeah. Yeah, you might.
Yeah, but I haven't posted. Yeah, I haven't posted there since last year. Well, not long after I posted that letter, I said this is my last message on.
Oh, okay.
I really didn't have time to sit around on the computer a lot. Anyway.
What do you do for a living?
What do I do for a living? Well, while I'm here, I hold workshops and I teach. I teach people about the native ways and everything.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people that are interested in that, and I've been asked to go to schools. I go to out-of-hour school care facilities and do one-hour programs for children. They never end up being 1 hour. They always end up being an hour and a half, too, because people don't want me to leave. And I go to teach a lot of the Native Aboriginal children here, too. And I brought all my regalia here with me and everything. I brought all my flutes. I've got about 18 different flutes that I play. And I put on a pretty good show for these people, these kids. And pretty much I'm trying to bridge the gap here between the cultures and show them what Native Americans are like. You know, and I give them, a lot of different examples of the different tribes. I see. If you look at the Miamis and the Potawatomis, you know, a lot of them have blonde hair, blue eyes, and white skin, full beards. There's different kinds of Native Indians around all over the place. So we're trying to get, you know, just bridge that cultural gap is what I do. And I don't sell Indian. If I make a medicine bag or a dream catcher or something like that, I give it to somebody. And I don't ever ask for any payment. It's offered to me, and you know, I've got other methods of income as well. So
right. Well, you know, taking donations, and that's always been traditional. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't want to be accused of being a member of the Doe Nation. people want to, and they kind of expect you to take it. You know, I get everything from stones given to me, crystals, different craft items that people have made, and that's all fine and dandy. You know, money's not a big issue with me. I'm not rich, but I get by pretty well.
Of course, you got. How long have you been married? You got a family?
We just celebrated our 4th anniversary.
Oh, any kids yet?
Not on this end. No, I've got a boy. He's 24 over in the state, and I've got a grandson who's 5 now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're older than I am. You're in your mid 50s. So yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be 53 this June. Yeah.
Right. And, now you mentioned this gal you met with Powell. Is she Australian?
She was born here in Adelaide. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
She was born right here. Yeah.
So now Adelaide is in South Australia. Where's that? No. Adelaide is where?
Yeah, we're down in the little bay area there.
Okay, that's where I thought.
At the bottom of the map, there's a little notch in the land there.
Right. So you're not too far from Dr. Gottrell, because he's down there in that province, okay.
Oh, he's 20 minutes away from my house.
Yeah, that's interesting. And my dad always felt constrained by the U.S., and, you know, given the right circumstances, I think he'd have thrown it all over and gone to Australia. That was his big dream, too.
Yeah.
Go do something different. It was still kind of the last frontier, but you know, the frontiers are in our minds nowadays, you know.
There's no better here than there, or no better there than here, I suppose.
Yeah, it really, as long as you're doing something you believe in, and because you know, if you don't, if you're just going through the motions, you've got a vocation, and can't do something that you really believe in, you just become an automaton and you lose your soul, and that's why, you know, I love doing this, because I get to learn. Well, you know, they say the teacher is always the one that gets to learn the most, so.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Well, we certainly appreciate you calling, and at your cost.
That's not a problem. I love to talk, as you can tell. Anytime, Blue Otter.
That's a lot of fun. I know the folks are. We'll have to get you back on. I think we're going to have to start doing two interviews a week, because I've got about. I figured, you know, we might get to that point. And
I've got so much information.
Yeah, you know, I've got a whole bunch of people waiting to be interviewed. I'm going to interview Dr. Luis Mel Madrona. He's an author. He's part Cherokee. I'm going to interview him Sunday. And we're going to, let's see. And then you introduced me to another elder that's a member of Monataka. And I got a whole bunch of other people. I think, you know, we might have to start doing one on Saturday and one on Sunday, and maybe one on Friday. Who knows? The show's growing, and we've now got prophecykeepers.net, which is a cool new discussion board, and you're teaching on that. And we got the foundation up and running, so we can take donations are tax deductible, and. So it's we're over that hump of the first year, and
things are moving on, and I think things will go a bit more swimmingly now. I guess that first year is always real tough for nonprofits. We really wondered, but it's like anything, it's worth doing. It's worth doing well.
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon here, too. I'm going to send you a little something because what I have to do, since I don't do credit cards and personal checks and things like that, is I have to go down to American Express to get the traveler's checks. And
oh!
Everything, $25 in the United States is $50 here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different currency thing, but it's all the same.
Well, we sure appreciate it. You know, we can use every little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not expected. We'll never turn away a donation.
Well, you shouldn't.
Because
yeah.
I'll tell you, when it comes down to, and we're hoping to start doing some mass mailings legally,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know whether that'll work or not. You know. Sure couldn't hurt. The last time I looked at it, you know, they wanted, I don't know what it was. It was, you know, $700 for 1,000 names or something like that. But, you know, like the price of everything on the net, it's all coming down. So, and they have double opt-in lists where people actually want to get mail and certain stuff. So we'll give it a try. We'll get it a spin. What the heck? Got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And, because I know there's people out there. I mean, everyone in the world knows about Nostradamus. And the interview that
he
did with John Hoag, you know, we were pretty much, in my mind, you know, we proved that, you know, he saw something. He saw the astrological configuration and the drought and these other things that were going to be going on during that period of time. And, you know, going way back to the beginning of this show, back last year, some of the people might remember that I kept asking everybody if December 26th meant anything to them because of some things that happened to me back in 84 and in 85. And I kept asking, you know, what about December 26th? And then all of a sudden, you know, the tsunami happened on December 26th. And
people felt that one coming.
Yeah, well, and then I was told that, you know, this year was going to be the year of the Great Havoc 7 years ago, and that certainly happened. And now I'm really kind of concerned about this thing with Yellowstone, because I think what I need to do is I need to write a new ebook, you know, explaining that the Yellowstone, the way the scientists explain what would happen if Yellowstone did go, that it would fulfill so many far-out prophecies, you know, especially more about red skies and, you know, refugees being on their, you know, walking long distance. I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And
they're worried about the ones in Sumatra too. There's a big supervolcano.
Yeah, they sure are. And
Aboriginals are warning us here that there's going to be a massive earthquake here in Adelaide. They're warning us now. Scientists are warning us. They've been on television about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the Aboriginals say, yeah, it's going to the epicenter will be in Blackwood. And I'm thinking, oh, good, that's 15 minutes from here.
Well, they had that black rain. They had predicted what a black rain situation down there, and that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that happened. I should have brushed up on my Aboriginal. You know, folks. You know, I've got two prophecy encyclopedias, and one for Eastern, one for Western Hemisphere, and the two of them together are 650 pages, and you know, a lot of times I can't remember everything that's in it because we've literally got, you know, from Aboriginal to Zulu, 160 articles from 60 different nations, and I can't remember them all. I guess I need to go back. But I remember that one about black rain and some other ones that had been fulfilled. And so the Aboriginals, they're plugged into the Mother Earth message system, and they know what's coming down the pike.
Yes.
Well, I sure appreciate you calling.
Your circles.
Yeah, and any last words for the folks?
Gather your circles. Make it one big one. That way we don't have any missing links in the chain. I think we can, it's inevitable that there's major changes coming. We're not going to avoid that because Mother Earth is stretching out, giving birth. And, you know, if we don't go back to the 13-moon calendar, back to Earth time, Mother Earth is going to do it for us sooner or later anyway.
Mm.
I think there'd be a lot less chaos, and who knows, maybe a peace would break out. Yeah, I would just say keep your circles going, but try to get together and use the vibration, the power of love and healing to cushion the blow.
Okay, well, Watto, for being on the show.
Thank you, Blue Otter.
Okay.
And I will talk to you again.
All righty. And thanks, folks, and we'll see you again next week. All righty. Thanks a lot, Daryl.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like
dehydrated.
And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. and his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
There we go.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction and, importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Crescent Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by three U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not
sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical, and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best-known one of which is the two-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Hey.
Let the truth